11 years since the invasion of Iraq, and an outcome suddenly looms that no one wanted and that now it appears no one can prevent. This hour, people on the ground in Iraq speak, and veterans home from a war remember their mission from so long ago. We begin with a couple of important facts on the ground right now. A battle is raging between ISIS forces and government forces at an oil facility that controls a quarter of Iraq's refining capacity, Beji, the largest such facility in the country. Meanwhile, a call for U.S. airstrikes from Iraqi President Nouri al-Maliki has gone unanswered at this point from Washington. Various reports from Pentagon officials say targeting is too difficult right now without killing civilians, or that the political situation is too uncertain, a possibly veiled suggestion that the U.S. might rather have Maliki out of the way before intervening. The Saudis have expressed a clear preference that the Shiite leader Maliki be replaced in Baghdad. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick is in the Capitol in Washington. Todd, welcome to the Takeaway.
Hi, John. Good to be with you.
So who have you been talking to? What is the situation like on the Mall, at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, at the places where Americans go to really think about what's happening in the world right now?
Yeah, well, I took a little trip down to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial yesterday, John, because it's a good place to go at a time when Americans are thinking about war and cost and opportunity. You know, I want to set the scene for you just to give you a sense of how people tend to think about things around the memorial there. I was hanging around a group of Korean War vets, just kind of talking to them, chatting, and up came a kid, an eighth grader named Joshua. Just listen.
Excuse me, have all you guys served the military?
And yeah.
Shake your hand.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for your
Thank
service.
You. All right.
John?
What?
This little gentleman would like to shake your hand.
Oh!
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You get old enough to get up airway. Join the Marine Corps.
You know, that iconic V there in the middle of the mall is a place where civilians and military veterans meet and express those feelings of thank you and also sort of stare at the names on that wall if they're part of the Vietnam conflict and wonder what it was all for. And that's definitely a question that's being asked and answered by Americans today.
Yeah, there's no question about it. When they think about wars of the past in context of the war in Iraq and what might be ahead of policymakers here. John, I ran into a lot of Korean War vets yesterday. They were honor flight participants, not just World War II, but Korean War vets. And I fell into a conversation with a couple of guys, buddies from Clyde, Ohio, Glenn Kistler, who's a retired painter, and Gene Ross, a retired environmental engineer. And I sort of asked them what they hoped Americans were thinking about during this time of a renewed discussion about a crisis in Iraq.
I hope they're thinking we've had enough war. It's time to tell our representatives in Washington, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. Tell them that we're sick and tired of spending billions of dollars to help other countries that don't appreciate our help.
We spent $12 billion to train the Iraqi army. And what did they do? Threw their guns down and run. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Two Korean War veterans there, Glenn Kistler and Gene Ross. What else did they tell you?
Well, Gene Ross in particular, John, was very, very wary of any U.S. action going back into Iraq. Forget about troops on the ground, but even drone strikes. And a lot of the veterans I talked to, and I don't know if I just got a particular sample of them, it's impossible to tell, but they just really seemed pessimistic about the whole situation. Listen to Gene Ross and Glenn Kistler one more time here.
I do not feel that we should send American troops back to Iraq. I do not feel that we should send American planes back there. I don't feel that we should waste another dollar on Iraq. Let the Iraqi people take care of themselves. If they end up with a dictator, it's their country.
I hope from now on we're not the superpower. I hope somebody else leads. We're done leading. We've been leading forever. Let China send troops in there.
And I fell into another conversation with a really interesting woman, Melissa Deesberg. She's from around the neighborhood in Washington, Williamsburg, Virginia, not too far away. Melissa was there with her daughter, whose name was Victoria. And I had a great conversation with them that she steered around actually to the fact that she has a teenage son.
My son is 14, kind of looking at actually going into the service one day.
How does that make you feel?
Scared. with all these young men as early as 19. 20 coming home and have to be buried. So it's a scary thing for a mom. And with this whole thing in Iraq, it's scary.
You know, it's amazing, Todd, how these headlines and how the situation in Iraq right now, which policymakers are discussing in a very different context, should Nouri al-Maliki stay or go, is raising so many questions about what it means to serve the United States of America there in a place where so many people have served and the evidence of it is on those walls.
No doubt about it. I'll leave you with this, though, John. Melissa said she would be proud to have her 14-year-old son join the military. But then I asked her to reflect on Iraq. Listen.
I know there's a lot of good people, and they're helping. But as far as us going over and giving as many lives as we've given, I just feel like maybe it wasn't worth it.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Now we join reporter Susanna George filing for the Global Post from the Kurdish-controlled city of Erbil, speaking to people who have fled ISIS-controlled Mosul and Tikrit. George says even in government-controlled Baghdad, residents are fleeing because they say the tension is rising there.
I mean, I definitely say that the overwhelming feeling here is hopelessness. I think people are tired, and most people who I talk to here say that, you know, Iraq, as we know it as a single unified country, is a thing of the past. It just doesn't exist anymore. Especially in the Kurdish region, you're hearing for a lot of calls for Iraq to divide into three parts, a Sunni, a Shia, and a Kurdish part.
You know, one of the most remarkable quotes I heard this week was that the reason the Iraqi fighters, the Iraqi government and security forces put down their weapons and tore off their uniforms and left Mosul is because they felt they had nothing to fight for. Is that a commentary on the government of Nouri al-Maliki at this point? And is that a widely shared belief?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a combination of a lot of different things. I think that there's a lot of disillusionment with Maliki as a leader, with his government, which a lot of Sunnis see as increasingly sectarian, a government that oppresses them. And then I think that also you do have a sense that people are not fighting for a single nation. They're not fighting for a homeland. That's one of the reasons when you talk to Kurds that they say their Peshmerga forces are so effective, because they actually have a real strong idea of a homeland that they're fighting to protect.
And that is not the case for the Sunnis, even though they generally describe their territory as being around Baghdad. And the Shia militias, at least, claim the south of the country. That's much less clear at this point, right?
Yes, though, interestingly, we did see a shift of a kind after we heard a call to arms by Shia leader Ayatollah Ali Sistani. After that call to arms, a lot of the Shia soldiers who I spoke to who deserted said that they now felt that they really had to get back out onto the battlefield. Now they actually had something to fight for because it became a religious duty for them. No longer, they weren't just fighting for their country, they were fighting for their religion.
Which also underscores the point that the government is not really involved here. It's become a sectarian battle, and the government has really been pushed aside. Let's hear from a woman who only wanted to be identified by her first name, Rhonda, someone you talked to who actually fled Baghdad because it's too tense in Baghdad, and you caught up with her near Erbil. Rhonda here.
You know, can I say I hate them all? I don't know all of them. I don't care of them, actually.
She expressed what you hear a lot here in Iraq, that no one really feels like they have a leader that represents them, and people just have a complete lack of faith in this entire order that was installed after the 2003 invasion.
And there's not much faith in the United States. Here's Rhonda one more time.
I think Iraqi people need to solve that problem. Don't just say U.S. politicals, you know. It's need to Iraqi politicals to solve this problem, because it's Iraqi matter, you know. That's not Sudanese, international matter.
It's an Iraqi matter, she says. It's not an international matter. That sounds to me like a prescription, though, for chaos in the near term, and that may even become long term, depending on what you're seeing on the ground there, Susanna.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you're definitely hearing a combination of, you know, frustration with the United States and with foreign intervention, not only from the U.S., but also from Iran. But at the same time, a complete lack of faith in the other options, the Iraqi options that are available to people, their government and their military, the institutions that are supposed to be protecting Iraq.
Anybody missing the days of Saddam Hussein? And does anyone have faith that Iran might actually be able to help at least the population in the south of the country?
I think that, you know, people are increasingly desperate. You do hear from some Iraqis that they just want someone to kind of step in and bring things under control. But it's hard to generalize with that. People, I think, are frustrated and tired, and they're just kind of looking for an end to the conflict.
Susanna George, thank you very much. You're reporting on the situation on the ground in Erbil. Susanna George files for the Global Post. Thanks, Susanna.
Thank you.
My name is Alex. I'm calling from Kingsland, Georgia. I don't think it's right to help your neighbor if you can't put your own house in order, but if you can put your house in order and your neighbor is in distress, you have to help him. But the fastest way to get stability in this region is something the West doesn't have a stomach for.
From Provo, Utah, Iraq's fate should matter very much, but that doesn't mean we should get involved militarily. America's preferred methods should always be humanitarian, diplomatic, and economic. As with war, waging peace requires hard work and great sacrifice.
This is Ray from Newark, Delaware. I think it would be terrible if the weaponry we left continued to kill the innocents. It's our responsibility to clean up our mess.
And Eugene, Oregon, we have our own lives to consider. We need to stop being the schoolyard bully of the world and work on our lives and bettering ourselves. Call us at 877-8MYTAKE, be a part of the conversation, or find us at facebook.com/thetakeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training programs developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving through games. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
The Henry Luce Foundation, for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.